Call the meeting to order. We do have a quorum. First item of business, we need someone to go ahead and approve the minutes dated March 3rd, 2011. Representative Hansen.
I'll move the minutes.
Makes the motion, moves the minutes. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. So we're just taking up two bills today, members. First bill that we will be hearing is carried by Representative Gunther. Representative Gunther is making his way up front here.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members.
Welcome to the committee. We do have to have someone move your bill so we can have it before you. Representative Torkelson will move House File 716. Representative Gunther, welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, and it is with a pleasure that I introduce House File 716 that basically takes care of what I think is a big inequity. It repeals a rule, Minnesota Rules Part 4410.4300, subpart 5, is repealed in this bill. Basically, as you all, I'm sure, know, the EQB and the EAW, and according to the EQB and the EAW, is a screening tool to determine the full environmental impact statement, if a full environmental impact statement is needed. And EAW is a questionnaire about the project's environmental settings and a potential for environmental harm. So basically what I'm asking you to do is to waive an EAW for an ethanol plant that wants to expand to more than 5 million gallons in production. And as you know, an EAW costs money, but an EIS costs a lot more. So at any time, the MPCA can go to an ethanol plant, a feedlot, or wherever, and ask that an EIS is make a statement EIS is needed, and have an EAW if they think that it is needed. And they still have the ability to protect the environment, even though an ethanol plant plans to increase production 25 million gallons. So basically, that's the bill. It eliminates the mandatory required EAW after 5 million gallons.
So, do we have any questions, members? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And what was the motion? Was it to refer it to another committee or with approval? Or
Representative Hansen, yes, thank you. This will be going to the Environment Committee if it passes out of this one.
Okay.
Yes, thank you. Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair and Representative Gunther. Representative Gunther.
Yes.
The EAW, you know, and part of its name is assessment, and I'm wondering why we wouldn't want to do an assessment before there are problems to try to evaluate whether there is the potential for problems rather than having to clean up or have penalties after a problem occurs.
Representative Gunther.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Hansen, very good question. An EIS is mandatory when an ethanol plant starts to be built in the process of having that thing. Once that process has gone through and an EIS says that this is an environmentally safe project, like they're probably really worried about the first two or three, but after the 13th or 14th ethanol plant, they pretty much had it down. Now, it is in statute that we're repealing that after 5 million gallons increase, you have to have a mandatory EAW. And there is no significant difference whatsoever if you go to 25 million gallons more than that for an ethanol plant. You know, if ethanol plants were just starting out, I would question that. But today, after ethanol plants have been in place for as long as they have, it's very evident to me, and I hope to you, that an EAW is not necessary unless it has been found in some inspection or some other way that this ethanol plant is in violation of some environmental act. Now, certainly there have been ethanol plants that have been fined for going over 5 million gallons more than their nameplate says. And what I want to do is eliminate that from happening. And if there was a significant difference, and you know me pretty well, you know that I would not be proposing this law.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Gunther, but with an EAW, it could evaluate whether there are changes to the groundwater quantity that's available. There could be impacts that are involved with increased production that maybe weren't there or weren't evaluated with the original EIS. Why would we not want to look at that prior to approving that increase?
Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Hansen, an EIS has already been done for this ethanol plant, and they know the water capacity that it has already. So if there was any idea that this would cause a hardship to the water table, they wouldn't even think about it. So all this does is it gives them the ability to expand more than 5 million gallons. And there is no consequence for expanding more than, expanding to a bigger number than that if the plant has capacity. Now, if they're going to rebuild the plant and start a whole new plant by increasing it to 100 million gallons, they're going to have an EIS then. But to expand it to 10, 15 million gallons more, they don't have to have an EIS, and they shouldn't have to have an EAW.
Representative Hansen?
One final question, Mr. Yes. Chair. And Representative Gunther, have there been any expansions that have been denied after an EAW that's been required under these rules?
No. Not to my knowledge.
Representative Hansen? Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Gunther. I'm sure you're aware of that recently there was an article in the Strib about, I think, five ethanol plants that had some violations, air and water violations, to the tune of about $3 million, I think it was, 2.8 or something like that. And you indicated that if the industry was new, you wouldn't be pursuing this. But in fact, when within the last 12 months, we've seen five different plants, whether they were new or not, come up with some violations. It's of a concern to myself, anyhow. And how, I guess my question then is, how will the local folks, how will local citizens and even the local units of government address or be made aware of concerns and problems?
Representative Gunther.
Sure. Mr. Ward, I'm glad you asked that question also, because the MPCA in 2006 were given 100% of their fines that they did. It started out at $89 million, I think that was the figure that they had in fine income. After they got done, where they could keep 100%, it was a funny thing how they came with over $3 million just with ethanol plants. There has been a problem with water quality. There was, I have three ethanol plants in my district. Two of them got fined in my district, and one of them was when some corn syrups got into a tile and went into a ditch and killed some carp, which the neighbors all thanked them for. They then fixed the problem. They were fined $450,000, and this is one of the most environmentally correct ethanol plants in the nation, I believe. They have windmills to become more green than ever before. They have a plant that builds dry ice using carbon dioxide up. They have a fluidized bed where they heat the silica sand to 1600 degrees and put the corn syrups in there. They gasify them, then they burn the gas instead of natural gas. They are given millions of dollars worth of benefits from the federal government from being so environmentally correct, but yet they got fined $450,000 by the MPCA. And then we have one in Fairmont that was treating their water. The water went into a Center Creek. Right now, the remedy of that fine is to build a pipe 20 miles from Fairmont, Minnesota, to the Blue Earth River over between Winnebago and Blue Earth, at a very high price, because the creek contaminated the water that they sent over there. So there are some bizarre instances that have happened. I'm glad they're looking at those plants. I'm glad they're finding out if there is anything wrong with them. I think they're just a tad bit zealous, but that's my personal opinion. I know you have one you drive by on the way home. That one's gone through a lot of struggles. They are big producers of tax income to the state of Minnesota, not as big of producers of jobs as I'd like to see them be, because they seem to be pretty automated. But I think by and large, they are being looked at very carefully and looked at through a microscope. And I'm glad that's happening, because if there is a problem, they'll find it. And nobody's perfect, and we found out that they aren't, and I'm sure they're all getting better because of what's happened.
Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that answer, Mr. Gunther, Representative Gunther. And I do drive by it in Representative Lemire's district every time I go home and look at it as a economic booster for our areas and our community and our districts and things as such, as job and economic growth. And one of the things that I do get concerned about with when we do these kind of proposals is that, and I think you're kind of a local control kind of person, if I remember correctly, Representative Gunther, and aren't we removing some local control from our local units to be able to have a say in a review and evaluation on this process if we go ahead and do this?
Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As I said, Representative Ward, I have 3 ethanol plants in my district, and I asked the local government people about this bill I'm having, and universally they said that they approve of what we're doing because they enjoy having that ethanol plant survive. With high-priced corn we have today, ethanol plants have a lot to worry about, but yet they're surviving. A district like mine, which is the number one pork-producing district in the state, I have another problem, so I want you to pray for me next Sunday, will you please? Because I have the corn producers I got to satisfy, I got to satisfy the pork producers and the ethanol plants, and I got to hope they all are successful enough to hang on there. And if I can make their life a little bit better, I certainly want to do that in any way like I would assume you would, and I would certainly support any efforts you have.
Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Gunther, if my prayer doesn't add to 5 more minutes of my mass time, I'd be glad to do that for you. Thank you.
I appreciate it.
Any other questions, members? Is there Representative Hansen?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Gunther, I'm thinking back to an amendment on the House floor last year where we passed, I think, with bipartisan support. It was an voice vote on saying that if there were environmental concerns with an ethanol plant, that their subsidy would be at risk or have some consequence. And I'm just thinking here, if we're going to probably be sending out 10 to 12 million in checks this year for ethanol plants, we've got JobZ, there's probably some Rural Finance Authority loans, and here we're coming with an exemption from EAW requirements. So what is the responsibility for the public investment for ethanol plants? If we are going to exempt them from some of the standards that other folks are having to do, and we're providing them money or we're providing them with tax breaks, where do we come into accountability for the public dollar?
Representative Gunther.
Thank you. It's also an excellent question. I remember very well when I was in the legislature. I've been here too long, some people think. But I was in the legislature when we mandated the 10% blend. I was in the legislature when we had ethanol come there. And I remember very well that the only way they could be built was with some okay by the state of Minnesota. And it came in the way of a 20-cent per gallon subsidy for the first 13 million gallons, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, someone, and that was for 10 years. That 10 years for, and it was only for 10 plants. They extended that for 13 plants, so Representative Lemire's plant could be included in that. The new ones that have been built, which 2 of these are in my district, are new. They don't get any subsidy. And the subsidy, only because Governor Pawlenty vetoed that subsidy, got rid of that subsidy at one time, and then came back and said, I made a mistake. I don't know if he ever said that, but that was the result of his statement saying that in the future we are going to give them back that money that we took away. The only way we could get lenders to lend money to an ethanol plant to get it built, because it's very, very intensive funding. The new plant in my district costs $270 million to be built. So it's something that would give the lenders comfort in order to start an industry that, when you look at the billions of dollars that it has produced for the state of Minnesota, and not counting the fact that over 1 year our fossil fuels didn't have to be imported from the Mideast or Canada, and they are coming in the form of ethanol that we burn in our cars. We don't have to buy isopropyl, whatever it is, to keep heat anymore, because we have ethanol. I think it's a positive thing for the state. There are some people that are worried about our water. However, as you heard in Environment Committee, I did a little research, and 7 golf courses in Minneapolis use more water than all the ethanol plants put together. I think they are doing a better job. The plant in Welcome is recycling their water to the extent that they have to take the solids out and landfill them now. This plant did not do that. It put water in the ditch. It went through Center Creek, the other plant that got fined. And because of the contaminations that were in Center Creek, it did that. And you probably know where Center Creek is.
I do.
Representative Hansen. No? Is there anybody in the audience that would like to testify for or against this bill? So make your way forward. Representative Anderson. Paul.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to just thank Representative Gunther for bringing this bill forward. I have an ethanol plant close to my district, and remind all of us that the price of gas goes up almost daily. Ethanol production in this country accounts for about 10% of all the gallons used in America. So without ethanol, I shudder thinking what the cost of gasoline might be in our country. So ethanol is important to our areas of rural Minnesota. It's important to our nation. And if we can help them somewhat ease this permitting process, I am very much in favor of it and want to thank you for this bill.
Representative Falk.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess a couple comments, if I could, to Representative Gunther, too. I feel the pain that you're having to deal with when you have to appease the pork producers and the corn growers and the ethanol people. So maybe that is indicative of the fact that we need to start looking at, like, the next generation of ethanol, which is cellulosic, and that would provide some of that flexibility and diversity and make everybody's lives a little bit easier, because you're not reliant solely upon one source of feedstock. So that's something for the committee to also consider. I'd also comment, too, that I think having the public comment period on these plants can oftentimes be a good thing. I know in my district we've had a lot of community buy-in for the good work that Chippewa Valley Ethanol Company has done. And a lot of that has been brought forward through public comments and by opening it up and allowing people to go and learn more about what's going on, the good work that's being done, and be able to have their voice put into that public record. So just to make the point, too, members, that the public comment is oftentimes a good tool to use to help really explain the benefits and explain the good work that's being done.
Thank you. Representative Hosh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Gunther, an EAW is much different than an EIS. Can you tell me how much administrative time or costs have gone into the complying with the current rulemaking requirements?
Representative Gunther.
Thank you. Representative Hasha, an EAW is the inspection that is taken to determine if an EIS is necessary. An EAW generally takes less time, but not necessarily, not always, can take less time, and will absolutely be less costly than the EIS will be.
Yeah. Representative Hosh.
Mr. Chair and Representative Gunther, the violations that you spoke of with the fines levied on some of your plants, how would this bill mitigate that?
Representative Gunther.
This bill if there is an inspection, MPCA can still inspect an ethanol plant. And if there is a complaint, like happened in corn plus ethanol plant, that they saw this milky substance leaving, which was corn syrups. They called the MPCA or the DNR, whoever they called, I wasn't sure, and they came and they checked it out. And that precipitated not in having an EAW, precipitated in having an inspection to find out where this stuff came from.
Sure.
And then that precipitated a fine. And that eliminated the problem.
Representative Hosh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Representative Gunther, were any of those fines a result of the rule that requires an EAW?
It's already in law, Representative Hosh, that you can expand an ethanol plant 5 million gallons.
Yep.
And I'm repealing that law to make it more than that, but less than 100 million gallons.
Representative Hosh.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Gunther, again, you've identified a problem with, you know, I think we probably in greater Minnesota all have examples of maybe an overzealousness of some departments. What I want to know, though, the rule, the bill, that you've identified the problem of fines that you think were probably levied inappropriately. Does this bill, I mean, I want to know, were those fines a result of this rulemaking? No. Okay. Thank you.
Representative Gunther.
They were not. And I think about your sewage treatment plant where everything was falling apart. You didn't need any kind of inspection to determine that. It was very evident, and things are very evident with ethanol plants, too.
Representative Hosh. We do have a testifier, Representative Gunther. So, welcome. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Gary Botzik, representing the Minnesota Environmental Partnership. And just a few words, there's no question ethanol and ethanol plants have been a godsend for rural Minnesota and all of Minnesota, and we don't oppose them. We do oppose the lifting of the mandatory EAW, and we appreciate the fact that this is going to Environment Committee for further discussion. From what Representative Hansen, Mr. Ward, and Mr. Faust just said, those are some of my arguments. I won't repeat them, but EAW, the violations, that's what I mentioned, the violations for some of the ethanol plants were in violation of the permit. The permit that PCA issued was based on EAW. So the EAW is a worksheet, and it sorts out. It's sort of like a TMDL, if you know what that is, for impaired waters. But the EAW lays out some of the concerns and the application or ways to avoid problems. There have been violations, and I don't know the zealousy or overzealousy of the PCA. I'm just reading them in the paper as they occurred. There was an ethanol plant turned down, if you recall, in Marshall, Minnesota, for the ability or desire to pull too much water out of the aquifer down there. So that, I think, was a direct relation or application of an EAW. So that helped us determine that that plant may not fit in a certain area. And each of these plants are different, as you know from your districts that you represent, where the aquifers are, how deep they are, how much draw there is on them, and also where the release from ethanol plants might be as far as lakes, streams, and rivers. So we appreciate this piece of legislation. We look forward to working with it, and we appreciate support the motion to send it to Environment Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Botzik. We do have some questions. Representative Szymanski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Botzik, in your experience, how many ethanol plants have been built in Minnesota that once they completed the environmental assessment worksheet, we're not required to do the environmental impact statement?
Mr. Botts.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know that answer.
No.
None? Is that the author says none? I respect it for that.
Okay.
That's why the EAW, Mr. Chairman, is so important. Most of them don't have to do an EIS. EIS is much more extensive, much more expensive, but an EAW is a worksheet, as one of the legislators mentioned. But it does provide some of the needed information to avoid some of the potential pitfalls as it relates to contamination and or pollution down the road.
Representative Szymanski.
So in other words, Mr. Botzik, virtually every ethanol plant has to go to an environmental impact study. Can we jump to that conclusion? Or
no, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Botzik.
And Representative, I thought we just said none did EISs. All of them did EAWs, but none did EISs. So they were able, because of their size, to avoid the EIS, which is mining operations, as we just talked about on House File 1, those are bigger, even bigger than ethanol. And those, you know, have are going through, for instance, the PolyMet proposal is going through a major federal EIS right now. Very expensive, very time-consuming. But these ethanol plants have been able to avoid that due to the fact that they had sustainable and very well done EAWs.
Okay. Representative Schmitz.
Sorry, Mr. Chairman, I misunderstood the answer to the first question. I thought all the ethanol plants had done the environmental impact study.
Sorry, Mr. Chairman, if I wasn't clear.
Thank you. Any other questions, members?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Right. Representative Torkelson, would you like to renew your motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to renew my motion that House File
16
be passed by this committee and referred to the Committee on Environment, Energy, and Natural Resources.
Representative Torkelson removes his motion that House File 716 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Environmental Committee, Natural Resources. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Gunther. Members, next we have House File 73, Representative Anzos. So, would somebody like to move the bill so we have it before us?
Mr. Chair? Oh. I'll move. Is somebody else going to move, Mr. Chair?
That's all right.
Representative. Go ahead, Representative Paul.
Go ahead.
We're going to arm wrestle here or something, guys.
Left-handed. Left-handed, Mr. Chair, not, you know, left-handed.
Representative Ward.
I'll move House File 73 for...
Environment.
To go to the Environmental Committee?
Yeah. Representative Ward moves that House File 73 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Environment Committee, Natural Resources. Representative Anzels, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is my first time before this committee, and... I hope it's as enjoyable as the last bill was.
We're a pretty unruly bunch here, Representative Anzels.
You've heard the term distressed county before. And with regard to this legislation, House File 73, Lake of the Woods County certainly fits that definition. Lake of the Woods County has a population of approximately 3,800. The county seat is Bedette. It's located along the Canadian border. It borders with Couchiching County and International Falls and the Boise Paper Mill on the east, and Roseau and Warroad and the counties to the left all the way to the Canadian border. And it includes probably some of the world's finest walleye fishing. And tourism is clearly a third of the economic activity in this county. With that, this is a very, very poor county. And job creation and diversification have proved to be very, very elusive. We have some agriculture, we have some forestry, and of course we have the tourism related economies that I mentioned. This proposal, this legislation came to me from the County Board of Lake of the Woods County and its Economic Development Agency on behalf of five real homegrown local entrepreneurs, five individuals from the county, homegrown entrepreneurs who have created a company called Lakewood Energy LLC. And these entrepreneurs have been working quietly for about 4 years now. Have been working with the Department of Natural Resources Forestry Division to explore the opportunities of creating synthetic gas, biomass, from forestry residue, basically waste wood left over from logging operations both in Lake of the Woods County and the adjoining counties, where, of course, you know there's a lot of forestry activity feeding the mill at Boise at International Falls. So this is a pretty straightforward request of the legislature for feasibility and planning study money of $100,000 to be appropriated to the Lake of the Woods Economic Development Agency within Lake of the Woods County to study the feasibility of creating a manufacturing facility. It's anticipated that their work with the Forestry Division at DNR, that this has the potential to create 40 jobs. And many of you come from rural greater Minnesota, and you know how precious 40 jobs are in your counties, and this would really be something in my county of Lake of the Woods. So that's basically the proposal in the bill, and I didn't ask the entrepreneurs from Barrette to come down because, frankly, they're visiting with people in the forest products industry, logging companies and trucking companies, discussing the logistics of feeding such a facility if this were to come to fruition. Be happy to try to answer any questions.
All right, thank you. We do have a question. Representative Bruce Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Anzell, is there a similar type of a entity or a business that is located someplace else throughout in the United States that deals with manufacturing, like the upper northwest corner of the United States?
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, great question. None that I know of. This is the new and emerging technology dealing with cellulosic ethanol and biomass, and in this case, we would be using waste wood. I know of no facility currently operational.
Representative Anderson? No. Representative Lemire.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Anzell. We tried at our plant to using wood as the fuel. Is this type of, you know, is this a different method of producing ethanol? Because I know they couldn't get wood clean enough with the sand that's within the wood. It turned to glass, and it screwed up the whole system, and it would not operate correctly. So they invested millions of dollars into the facility, and all that extra revenue that they put into the facility is no longer being used because it wasn't working. Is this a different type of procedure?
Mr. Chair and Representative Lemire, the answer is yes and slightly yes. Cellulosic ethanol and or synthetic gas would be the outcome at the end of the process. And that is precisely why I'm here, asking for resources to answer those questions so we don't duplicate similar failed attempts in the past. But it's clear in talking to these entrepreneurs that they think that the far greater potential in the short term is with synthetic gas.
Thank you. Representative Lemire.
No? Follow Thank up? You, Mr. Chair.
All right. Representative Szymanski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Anzell, the plasma portion of the project, are you familiar with, are we looking at what we would call a plasma arc torch, or how will this be driven?
Representative Anzell.
Mr. Chair and Representative Szymanski, thank you for asking that question, and Mr. Chairman, I inadvertently forgot that an oral amendment, if you would accept an oral amendment,
okay.
Striking the word plasma.
Okay. So I'll make the motion.
Striking the word
Anzell's.
Plasma.
All right.
On 1.2 and on 1.8. This is not, should not be confused with the plasma torch technology which is also being looked at.
Okay. I'll make the motion on line 1.2 to strike the word plasma and the hyphen thereafter. And again on 1.8, strike the word plasma and the hyphen thereafter. Any discussion, members? All those in favor to my oral amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you very much, and thank you, Representative.
So, Representative Schmansky?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. That opens the next question. What will be the power source to drive this plant?
Representative Anzels.
Mr. Chair and Representative Schmansky, the power source will be forestry residue. Waste wood left from logging operations in the county and in Kuching and adjoining counties.
Representative Schmansky.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So are we going to burn wood to create the energy to produce the biomass gases then, or how? You know what I'm getting at. We need some heat source to drive the gasification, do we not?
Representative Anzels.
Mr. Chair and Representative Schmansky, I'm not sure if the operative word is burn or not, but obviously the feedstock being wood needs to be reduced in order to make energy. And I'm not being an engineer, I can't really go much further than that.
Okay. Representative Schmansky?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Anderson, Paul.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Representative Anzels, I salute you too for bringing us forward to trying to get some economic activity in our outstate regions. I have a couple of questions, and maybe this grant would go to answering those questions, but questions about, have they looked at having a market for their product, how big the plant would be, is there enough raw material to fuel a plant over a long term? Have they looked at any things like this?
Samanza.
Mr. Chair and Representative, frankly, that's the purpose of the feasibility study. The entrepreneurs believe that this is clean, it is green, there is a market. They would use an existing pipeline. There would be, they anticipate as many as 40 jobs. And so the study would actually be designed to answer those questions. And I might add, Representative Anderson, I promised the people in Lake of the Woods that I would try never to use the word outstate Minnesota. I always use greater Minnesota.
I echo that as well. Representative Anderson, a follow-up?
Just a quick follow-up. You mentioned the company Lakewood Energy and the five entrepreneurs. Is this kind of the beginning of the whole process, or do they have any skin in the game so far?
Representative Anzels.
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, the five entrepreneurs do have skin in the game. I don't know how much skin, but they have been working together for approximately 36 months, and much of the skin in the game has been to develop contacts throughout domestically and throughout the world, frankly, and in Canada, private investors for this venture, should this venture go forward.
So, Anderson, is there anybody in the audience that'd like to testify for or against? Please make your way up front. Any other questions, members? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Anzell, are there any scientific studies that have been done regarding this? Are these entrepreneurs actually scientists in of their own volition as far as their profession in bringing this forward? I mean, science always seems to be something that we turn to show the something that has the potential of working. So just asking to see if there's that bit in this whole process.
Representative Anzels.
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, two of the five entrepreneurs are engineers. One mechanical and the other one I'm not sure. There is not a scientist among the group.
Representative Anderson?
Thank you.
All right. Any other questions, members? No. Seeing none, Representative Ward renews his motion that House File 73 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Environment and Natural Resources. Any further discussion? No. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you very much.
Representative Anzels. All right, members, tomorrow we're going to have an interesting day. We have Representative Kahn is on the agenda. All right, so she said she's bringing a treat for all of us. So show up early, all right? We'll have a little fun, all right? We'll have a little fun. We're... I'm afraid so, Representative Hosh. I'm afraid so. So, all right, so that's on the agenda tomorrow. All right, with that, meeting adjourned. Thank you.